Welcome to Business Watch. How do we mind the gap and fix the mix when it comes to gender and diversity in private equity? Now, women are significantly underrepresented among the investment decision makers at private equity and venture capital firms, as well as in the leadership of companies that receive this investment capital. The finance industry says it wants more diversity at all levels, but private equity has proved stubbornly slow to change. Women hold only 10% of all senior positions in private equity and venture capital firms globally, and women made up about just under 13% of senior employees at North American private equity funds last year, less than half of the finance industry average, according to research by Preqin. I can't get my hands on the exact number for South Africa, but I'm sure it's pretty much in that ballpark. And even with junior levels close to gender parity, data does show that few women move up the ranks. Firms are often tightly held partnerships with senior managers who oversee fund life cycles that can last more than a decade. And while strides are being made in South Africa, the pace is still fairly slow. So to talk about this, I'm joined by Danae Lerutla, who's the managing partner at Maya Capital Partners, a debt impact investing boutique fund manager based in Joburg. We've got Daniela Kiert, who's head of private equity at FNB Commercial. Janice Johnson, who's chair of 100 Women in Finance South Africa and a private equity professional. And Langa Madonko, who's a board member of SAVCA, the industry body, and co-founder of Summit International. So welcome all. Thanks for joining us after this Women's Day celebration that we had yesterday. Danae, maybe just a good opener is just to get your perspective on the state of the private equity industry in South Africa today. Can you just give us an overview of where we are and how have things shifted in the past year after COVID and where we're going?
Thank you, Michael. I think, you know, without really going into the numbers, I would say if we just look at the trends in the economy overall, we're sitting in a country that is highly indebted. The country cannot raise any more debt. We have huge infrastructure gaps that we've had for more than 10 years before COVID, for that matter, which have only continued to deteriorate, some of it being, for example, the quality of education, especially in the public sector space. So where I see private equity going in the main, and women in particular in that vein, is that we've become, you know, call it the center of investments in South Africa. I think most of the solutions in terms of how to turn the economy are going to largely be sitting with the private investors who in the main depend on private equity funds to help them to actually advance those investments. So I think where private equity sits at the moment in the country is that we essentially hold quite a significant role in unlocking those investments that are going to help us grow the economy. And in that vein, we're sitting with more than 50.8% of the population being women and more than 40% of households being led by women. We cannot have any solutions that do not have women as a significant majority of how to come up with those solutions that we need.
I think a very important point you raised there. Janice, from your vantage point and building on that theme of potential opportunity for the private equity industry, certainly in an environment where the public sector is constrained by its inability to raise further debt, we've certainly seen that state-owned enterprises, the on-balance sheet model of funding infrastructure has run its course. It does seem to me that the outlook for private equity is particularly rosy.
Absolutely. I think it has a key role to play in the advancement of some of these critical sectors, certainly in terms of the new regulation and the general additional focus on alternative investments. I think it is going to play a very meaningful role in the allocation of capital to ensure that we meet our growth objectives in terms of the overall plan that we have for economic development in South Africa.
And we've had the National Infrastructure Plan of 2050, phase one, that's been published. We await phase two. And there's obviously a lot of reform momentum around energy at the moment. We seem to be heading that way, albeit slowly, when it comes to transport and opportunities in infrastructure. And then obviously climate finance and the just transition offering a whole host of opportunities as well. Daniela, from your vantage point, looking from sort of a, you know, kind of a captive fund perspective, what do you see as the lay of the private equity land at the moment?
So it's certainly very interesting, Michael. I mean, we're watching it very closely. I think there's been a big theme of kind of delistings and people really opting for a little bit more control in their what they're looking to achieve. I mean, certainly from the F&B standpoint, we've seen the smaller businesses really struggling to really evolve their equity ownership element. You know, so within F&B commercial space, we often deal with businesses with EBITDAs, you know, below this kind of 50 million mark. To find capital in the space is quite difficult. And I think we're seeing a lot more players coming into this space. So we're certainly seeing a lot more people getting interested in private equity, a lot more pressure of capital flowing into this private equity market, given there's the limited exposures available in the listed market, and certainly a great time to be investing.
And in terms of transitioning one's equity ownership according to the BEE legislation and rules, to find that partner that is a right fit certainly offers and presents a great opportunity for the private equity industry. Lunga, lastly, from your perspective, how do you read the lay of the land, the delisting crisis, if you want to call it that, for public capital markets is also an opportunity for private markets?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I think one of the things that we're seeing is there's a growing appetite from investors to invest in the listed space because they are seeing some positive returns. And when I say positive returns, I'm not only talking about financially, they're also seeing the ability of private equity to deliver social impact, to deliver on transformation, to deliver on issues of diversity and inclusion, to actually be the champions of driving thematically in the companies in which they invest, or what are the other imperatives outside of only the financial return perspective. I think also the other issue that makes it quite attractive at this time to be looking at alternatives is definitely infrastructure is going to be a big talking theme. And one of the key levers that has been absent in terms of delivering on the South African perspective anyway has been the equity portion. And private equity allows you to leverage pools of capital from different sources, high net worths, retirement funds, insurers, to almost satisfy that missing link that is required to accelerate the rollout.
And what has also struck me as an evolution, Janice, just as we talk now about how this relates to the issue around diversity in private equity, and it's a gender lens, it's a race lens, it's an age and experience lens. I mean, diversity for me goes beyond the kind of stereotypes and generalizations, especially in a private equity ecosystem where you've moved on from over-gearing or gearing and using financial leverage to generate returns to actually getting your hands dirty, rolling up your sleeves and generating returns beyond just financial engineering. And that seems to me where diversity and having that skill set is really going to come to the fore. How have you seen the evolution of the role of the private equity general partner over the last decade, and how this is now feeding into this theme, this ESG theme around increased diversity?
Yeah, so I think first of all and foremost is that we're building up a real body of evidence and data points that are suggesting that higher degrees of diversity inclusion are having a profoundly positive effect on both financial performance, on decision making, as well as innovation. So that's framing the context, I think, that as opposed to being more of a discussion point a few years ago, to something that's now becoming an action point where people are looking at it with real intentionality and real focus. And I think what it's showing is that the requirement for diversity and alternative perspectives within a team is so critical because it's actually allowing more stakeholders to be involved. It's ensuring that the thinking is expanded. And whilst this can often bring some friction, I think we must understand that the importance of diversity is actually being able to coordinate those conversations and those different outlooks in a really managed and productive way, such that we can move the conversation, as I say, into those real action points and ensuring that those teams feel comfortable with bringing all the different perspectives to the table. And as you rightly mentioned, from our side, you know, we talk a lot about gender and the fact that in terms of understanding the customer base, the products, all those types of elements into the decision-making process are well thought through. But it also does include things like race, age, and different ways of thinking about things that all can actually be accommodated in the most useful way.
And Danao, building on that, how is that impacting the recruiting into the private equity field? Because I mean, this is where it does become rather difficult. Because to my introductory point, you know, funds are long life cycle, sort of 10-year projects, and to break into the private equity at the best of times is very difficult. Now you're trying to break down barriers for women and more diverse teams. It really becomes a bit of a complex challenge. How do we go about solving for this?
You know, Michael, I think it starts at a grassroots level. It's about, I guess, the outcomes of our learner population coming out of high school, going into university. We have to also solve for the dropout rates to make sure that a lot more of our students can actually qualify when they are in higher education. But increasingly, we're seeing a trend that the learner population is dominated by women. So I guess over generations, we will start seeing a lot more of that shift. I think currently, you know, the short-term interventions that we could look at, which is something that we do, and I've seen other industry partners in private equity doing the same, is to not wait for, I guess, candidates that have some kind of industry preparation who've been in the market for, let's say, 3 to 5 years. But we've now actually got graduate trainee programs where some learners can come straight out of tertiary institutions and start getting exposure into private equity. And I think to their credit, SAFCA is quite active in quite a number of areas. Even the PE foundational course has been quite useful for a lot of the new candidates coming in to understand just how the sector is organized. So I think we need some kind of short-term and long-term interventions. We've got to always look at the quality of education and make sure that I think we're producing a balanced society that's having an increased representation of women, and make sure we have the education intervention tools to help them to complete their studies. But I think we also need to be quite intentional in the private equity industry to start taking the talent raw as it is and actually do the work of training them up over the years so that we can actually grow that population, you know, especially with a lot more relevant education that would actually enable them to be the best portfolio managers because they would have started early on. So I think that's part of where we need to focus a lot of time. And then we'll see an increased participation of women in the industry.
And I think what you raise is critical. If you look at the lens of professions, be it in law or elsewhere, very often it's still around networks and old school tie networks that require earlier intervention in order to kind of dismantle some of those, so to speak. But you can also be very intentional in the way you approach this. And you've done that, Daniela, at FNB through your commercial Black Business Growth Funding Transformational Equity Initiative. And we were chatting not too long ago about your first investment into Raise Africa Investment, the first Black woman-owned investment manager to include private equity funding through this initiative. So just take me through the thinking here and how you've set this up in order to be a very targeted intervention at helping Black woman-owned fund managers break into the industry.
No, thank you, Michael. And I think, you know, just picking up on some of the sound bites out of the conversation earlier, you know, we touched on financial engineering and we touched on networks. And those are two things that we absolutely are in the power seat to bring together. You know, through our F&B network and our broader First Rand networks, we can absolutely make those networks available to Black fund managers to tap into. And I think what we really try to do is solve this chicken and egg scenario in South Africa. Because, I mean, the conversation today has really just highlighted the need for Black fund managers investing in South Africa with this delisting crisis, as you referred to. You know, where is that money going to come from? And then you overlay the need for that deep, strong connection. So there's got to be chemistry between the Black fund manager or the fund manager and the business that's being invested into. So we really need to grow this market. And that's what we've done. Well, we've tried to support at F&B Commercial. We've really put some money behind upcoming Black fund managers with a bias towards women, And really what we're trying to do is just help them build up a track record that in a few years' time they are in a strong position to go raise capital from the market and really just be able to self-sustain themselves. So we're very proud of our initiative. I think we bring this kind of skill set where they potentially, I mean, they need support on building models and analyzing things and doing industry research. We bring that and we help them through that. And obviously we open up our whole network to them, which is really powerful and a great value add for our F&B clients as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Many family-owned businesses who are looking to tap into that network on the other side of the deal. Langa, you know, often when we talk about specifically when it's like women rising in private equity, we have these conversations and I see videos on YouTube and it's only women around the table. And that's why I said we've got to invite Langa because it's so critically important to have men as part of this conversation, isn't it? How do you approach this? And because it's about a coordinated conversation to Janice's point, how do you as a man in private equity think about this need to start shifting the gender gap in South Africa?
Yeah, so I think touching on something that Janice mentioned earlier, this conversation is no longer about the theory, it's about sustainability of the businesses. And unless you manage to achieve the diversity that is required, the inclusiveness that is required, it will begin at some point to immediately affect your bottom line because you need the diversity of thinking within the teams. So I think for me, there are basically 4 points that we always think about when we look at this. We think about it from a perspective of intentionality, giving our own case study. When we started, we are unfortunately a male team founder led and whatever, those nice things that they say. So we made decisions about having a majority female board, having a majority female staff, having deliberate succession plans and personal development plans for all the ladies within our team to ensure that when we come into successor funds, we have the talent pool that we require in order for us to have managing partners for the different funds and strategies that are ladies. We also thought about it from the perspective of how quickly can we grow and how quickly can we bring ourselves to have successor funds so that there is that room for them to grow despite the longevity of funds. I think the second one is about our networks. Our networks are into even funders. And even in those conversations, we're asking questions to say, you are having these developmental manager programs. What proportions are you allotting to ensure that our fellow counterparts who are women-owned funds, women-led funds, are also part of your development strategy? And we have to be consciously thinking about that. And then another space where we have contact and access is policymakers and policy and decision makers. So in my other role where I advocate for transformation, in our submissions around the amendments to Regulations 28, we spoke about considering the aspects of transformation, but also considering the issues of gender diversity in terms of how the regulation is drafted and what they would say about that. And then the last one I think is about having a voice. You are in the board meetings, you're on panels, you're in conferences, you're on TV shows, you're in newspapers. You need to speak up. You need to talk about the importance of diversity and inclusion and the outcomes that you have seen from having positively diverse teams across race, gender, age, and all the other factors that go into the diversity and inclusion conversation.
And I mean, all of that builds into the action points then. Janice, are we seeing enough action considering the attention that the conversation is starting to get? I had you on the show not too long ago talking about the launch of 100 Women in Finance. It's a great initiative to build up profile. Is that starting to translate into action?
I think that's a very interesting question, Michael. I mean, there is definitely a lot of positive momentum. There is definitely a lot of action that is taking place. And we can even see in some of the data points in terms of investment professionals over the last decade in SAFCA, for example, for a most recent report, you know, we were dealing with 18% of investment professionals being female 10 years ago. And that number has increased to 28% most recently. And, you know, that's not far far off the sort of 30% target, etc. So, you know, those are kind of movements and intentional gains that we must celebrate and also unpack, you know, what's been successful and what hasn't. Now, if we drill a little bit deeper, then I think there is still an increased gap in terms of the senior management decision makers within that cohort, and that percentage would be lower than the 28%. So that suggests that there is still work to be done at that level, because it's really when we start getting that mix at the senior level where it has a direct application to capital allocation decisions within the private equity market that I think we can sort of feel that we've really moved the needle significantly. So that is about career development. It is about having good retention strategies within the various fund management companies. It is providing support structures, networks, and to reinforcing that intentionality of ensuring that across the career stages that women are getting the type of opportunities that will really start shifting those numbers. I mean, I think also to say that it is about sort of institutional action and without a doubt and within the broad industry, but it's also about women, you know, playing their part and potentially also being a bit bolder, I think, in putting their hand up to opportunities as they present, which obviously slightly, you know, from a broad perspective, you know, perhaps women haven't been as proactive in general as some of their male counterparts in these areas. And so we must definitely encourage that within the broader workers.
And Danao, you certainly haven't shied away from it. You're managing partner at Maya Capital. What was your experience to get to that point? And what lessons could you potentially share with other women in private equity who are looking to follow in your footsteps?
You know, Michael, so one, I think we cannot replace, and that's quite core to private equity investing, particularly given the complexities of having to manage investments in the unlisted space. I think technical skills are core. So that for me was one of the key contributions that just made the complement of partners that I work with to make sense, in that there was a specific technical skill that I bring to the table. Secondly, I think it's the entrepreneurial itch. I think if you want to be in private equity, you've got to have some entrepreneurial flair to you. To me, I see it as actually one of the key skills that are needed in that space. But three, I think that working with well-experienced males was actually quite a big unlock in my experience. A lot of the decisions are still sitting with the Langers of this world. And increasingly, as they become sensitive, appreciating, and actually embracing gender inclusion, that's where you see the highest impact of it, in fact. And that's been my experience. So I think it does say that we have a wider ecosystem that actually needs to influence where private equity goes and the participation of women in it. And a big part of it, as has been shared in the conversation, involves the drive by men to actually embrace it and promote it. And I think also just the general changes, for example, in policy, do have a multiplier effect on some of those intentionalities once they've been set in motion. So I think the more we advocate for changes that are improving targets for transformation in gender and diversity, we bring males into the conversation in a big way. And we see that macro change, but there's also intentionality within the firms to actually embrace the skills that women bring. There's a lot that we can achieve in the sector.
Absolutely. And Daniela, I'm not one for big generalizations that women are naturally better communicators or more relatable. I think everyone is unique and individual, but there is a shared sense of struggle, I think, between women in private equity and founders, entrepreneurs in business. And that helps them connect and relate because there's a sense of shared struggle to rise to the top. And equally, as an entrepreneur, there's always that sense of struggle. So I think there is a huge advantage for having women-owned firms come to the private equity party, so to speak. Just as a final and concluding thought here, what would your advice be to women out there looking to rise to the top of their firms in this environment?
Sure. I think it's such a hard question. And I think, you know, it ultimately comes down to backing yourself. So, you know, I think we did talk about this whole concept that women don't often put up their hands. It's a very well-known, well-articulated, well-discussed topic lately. But just be very intentional about your career. And I think women, we do have this chapter in our lives. Well, often we do have this chapter in our lives where we have children and we have kind of figure out that same struggle and how we progress from there. And it's just about staying on track and being kind to yourself. So, you know, admitting that there are going to be challenges, there are going to be days you feel you can't do it, but just back yourself, focus on what's next, constantly develop yourself. You know, never take a day where you're not feeling like you're learning something new or developing your toolkit further. Grow your networks and just back yourself.
I love that. Just back yourself. And I think notwithstanding the gains that we have made, it is incumbent upon all of us to continue talking about this, both men and women, to ensure that we do start closing the gap and building on those early successes. Thank you very much. Daniela Kiertz of F&B Private Equity, joined around the table by Danae LaRutla, Managing Partner at Maya Capital. We also had Janice Johnson, who is a well-respected professional in the private equity industry and chair of 100 Women in Finance, and Langa Madonko, who's a board member of SAFCA and co-founder of Summit International, talking about the rise of women in private equity. You've been watching Business Watch on Business Day TV.